Who's ready for 2025? Everybody ready? Yes, that's what I like to hear, that level of enthusiasm. Thank you very much. Man, thank you, worship team. Wow, what a beautiful day to be here, isn't it? Lovely, wonderful presence of God. I want to make this statement. I like this statement. When we come together, it's not about conjuring up the presence of God. It's really about making us aware of the presence of God that is already here, that is already around us each and every day. It's just some days we just seem to forget and go blind to it. Or maybe that's just me. But thank you, worship team, Amy, for communion. Getting, you know, there's just something about being here. There's something about being with community. And I hope that as you look at 2025, you'll make this a priority for you, just the family of Ashworth, to be here for this encouragement, for one another, and for the presence of God. It is a new year, and I'm excited about that. Question for you to start with today. Have you ever been taken, had by somebody who tried to sell you something and you bought it only to realize after you got it, it really wasn't what you thought it was supposed to be? Anybody, I gotta see those hands. Go ahead, it's okay. Oh man, we've all been there. I ran across a website recently that highlighted fake brands, and I thought these were pretty funny. Like, you know, if you're really looking for that pair of nice Nike slides, and this is what shows up, you might not have gotten what you wanted, right? Or you're really hungry for some nacho cheese Ditos? Is that what those are? Ditos? I don't know. Or give me a break. Give me a break. Break me off a piece of that Cat-Cot bar? I don't know. What is that? I kind of got in this, you know, spiral last night looking up more of these things. I had just a few, and then I saw some others that were funny, like, who doesn't want a gift from Dolce and Banana? I mean, that's close, right? I'm curious if Skirples, are they as good as Sharpies? I don't know. You know, this next one made me laugh. I don't know. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Special Man. Special Man. Or instead of that beautifully smelling Dove Beauty Cream Bar, you end up with Dave. Anybody willing to try Dave? I'm just curious. Who's willing to try Dave? That one did make me laugh because I am very curious. What does that smell like? What does Dave smell like? You know, I don't. We'll just leave that one there. Or this last one is actually a photo I took a few years ago when I had the opportunity to be in Israel. We're driving down the street, you know, and let's go get that latte at Squarebucks. You know, I guess it's kind of, square is a shape, a star is a shape. It's got to be in the same family, right? To be honest, I don't know if half of these are true. They were on the internet, so they have to be real, but they made me laugh. But as we look at those, we get those Nikai slides, we're going to be pretty disappointed, right? I mean, we want the real thing, you know, and I remember even back in my banking days 100 years ago, when I started out as a teller, I remember there was a day where somebody came in with some $100 bills, and I picked them up, and I was feeling them, and I went, this doesn't feel right. Something was off. So we had a machine. You could run it through the machine, and it kind of ding, ding, ding. And I'm like, uh-oh. So we have the counterfeit pen, you know, that you can put on, and it turns it brown if it's fake. And it was fake. And so I had to go back to the customer, and I had to say, I'm sorry, we can't take these. These are the counterfeit. And what makes this even better is it's not like I could hand them back to the customer. I had to say, I'm sorry, I have to keep these. And we had to fill out a report and send them to the United States Secret Service. That's where counterfeit currency ends up, for them to investigate and see if there's anything there. Counterfeits always seem to leave you wanting. They're not quite exactly everything you'd hope for. But we do have to admit, there are times when a counterfeit will do. Let me see these hands now. Who's been in a big city and you've walked by that street vendor, and you knew it wasn't a Gucci or Dolce & Gabbana or even a Rolex, but that Rolex or whatever for $35. Let's see those hands. Who's done that? Go ahead. Look at these hands. You're like, that's all right. I will take the fake one. Sometimes, though, I wonder if we want the counterfeit because the cost of the real thing is too high. We don't want to pay the real price, so we're willing to settle for a knockoff. But we do know the fake thing is a fake thing, and it's never as good as the real deal. And sometimes it even costs us more than we thought and leaves us very unfulfilled. Is that you? Is that just me? I think that it describes it, doesn't it? These questions, these thoughts lead us to the first series of 2025 that we're going to be in for the next several weeks that we're calling Counterfeit Gods, where we're going to be looking at the fake gods, the counterfeits, the idols that we end up giving ourselves to, those that we often end up even serving in our lives, sometimes serving them even without realizing it. We give ourselves over to those things. Now, full disclosure here, one of my favorite authors and pastors, the late Tim Keller, wrote a book by this title called Counterfeit Gods. It's very good. I've read it. So if you pick up that book and you think, huh, Brent said that, his thoughts are definitely a part of these messages that we're going to be over the next few weeks. But before we can really dive into the idols that we give ourselves to or these counterfeit gods, we need to even ask ourselves this question. That's where we want to land this week is, what is an idol? What are the counterfeit gods that we're talking about? You know, even as I say the word idol, what comes to your mind immediately? What comes to your mind?
American Idol.
American Idol. Okay, the TV show. Very good. American Idol. What else comes to your mind?
Survivor.
Oh, the what idol is that? Immunity idol. Yes, sorry, you can tell I'm not a Survivor watcher. The immunity idol. What's that idol look like? It's a necklace that you get with a little totem kind of thing on. Is that right? I know Liz and Garrett, they're big, big Survivor fans there. What else do you think of when you think of an idol?
Wooden statues.
Yep. Anybody think of like Exodus where children of Israel or, you know, that Moses is on the mountain and what do? They make this golden calf. I know for me, when I think of an idol, as much as a fan of American Idol as I was for many years, I don't think about that for some reason. I think of this. I think of these primitive things, these primitive people, this time, the countries where golden statues or totems or all these things, wood carvings, and people are surrounding them. They're burning incense to them. They're praying to these things. They're bowing down to them. That's where my mind goes. And that's a little bit of a problem, though, because if that's what I think an idol is, then I don't ever look at me and think I have an idol problem. Because I don't have one of those in my house. But I do have other things that, truth be told, I probably bow down to and serve a little bit more than I should. It's easy for us to get kind of high and mighty. We're so sophisticated. I mean, we're Western Americans. I mean, what are we not good and great at? And because of this, we look down our nose at other cultures and think, well, we don't have idols like that. But Tim Keller, in the book I talked about, he writes this. He says, each culture is dominated by its own set of idols. Each has its priesthoods, its totems and rituals. Each one has its shrines, whether office towers, spas and gyms, studios or stadiums, where sacrifices must be made in order to procure the blessings of the good life and ward off disaster. That shakes it up a little bit, doesn't it? When we start to think about, oh, he mentioned some things, the office towers, the spas and gyms, the studios or stadiums, the televisions, the leisure things, the houses themselves, the families that we serve, all these things have the potential to be an idol. And we may not be bowing down to statues, but it's very easy for us to give ourselves, to give our lives to things like money, success, power, relationships, leisure. And herein lies the problem. That list that I just rattled off, money, success, power, relationships, leisure, none of those things are bad in themselves.
None of them are necessarily inherently evil. I mean, we often misquote the scripture, money is the root of all evil, but that's not what the passage says. The passage says it's the love of money that's the root of all evil, because we all know that money can be used for good or it can be used for evil. So none of those things I listed are inherently bad, and no one intentionally sets out to give themselves or pursue the negative side of those things. I mean, very rarely do people sit down and go, you know what? I think I'd like to be a greedy person. You know what? I think I would just like to lust all the time. I think I'm just going to get... Nobody sits down and does that. Hopefully not. It would be much easier for us if we had a statue, the idol of success, or that there was a statue that we had to make a sacrifice to or bow down to. That would make this easier, because it's not always the golden calf that gives us a problem. It's the good things that give us the problem. It's the good things that we make the ultimate things, that we center our lives around. It's those things that we deify. And when we replace God as first place with everything else, then we've just created an idol. Tim Keller puts it like this. What is an idol? It's anything more important to you than God. Anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God. Anything you seek to give you what only God can give. And he continues. He says, a counterfeit God is anything so central and essential to your life that should you lose it, your life would hardly feel worth living. An idol has such a controlling position in your heart that you can spend most of your passion and energy, your emotional and financial resources on it without a second thought. Here's Keller continues, and he says, it can be family or children or career and making money or achievement or acclaim or saving face and social standing. It can be a romantic relationship, peer approval, competence and skill, secure and comfortable circumstances, your beauty, your brains, a great political or social cause, your morality, your virtue, and even success in Christian ministry. He wraps this quote up. Sorry it's so long, but it was good. He says, an idol is whatever you look at and say in your heart of hearts, if I have that, then I'll feel my life has meaning. Then I'll know I have value. Then I'll feel significant and secure. There are many ways to describe that kind of relationship to someone, but perhaps the best one is worship. It's what we give ourselves to in worship. Martin Luther defined it this way: whatever your heart clings to and relies upon, that is your God. Trust and faith of the heart alone make both God and idol. That idol is whatever claims the loyalty that belongs to God. And where we think of idols and we go, all those things are bad, often they are the good things. They can even be things we need, things we already desire, the things we see that could give us a good life. But when we define idol this way, we discover that anything can be an idol. And throughout history, most everything already has been. You see, often in reflection, we want to ask the question this way: what am I living for? That's an easy question, right? Because then we can look at that and we can say, oh, well, I'm living for Jesus, or I'm living for good things and all this. But there's a psychologist named Alfred Adler, and he said, this question is really difficult for us to find out what we're really living for by asking ourselves this question. He said, because we don't really know our own hearts very well. And so he said, don't ask yourself this question. If you really want to find out what you're living for, he said, look at your nightmares. What scares you? So think for a moment. Don't ask yourself this question. Ask yourself this question. What is something that you think you cannot live without? What is something that you think you cannot live without? Because see, when we start to ask that question, the idols that we may have begin to rise up. What is something that if you didn't have, you would be devastated and crushed? What thing, if it were absent from your life, would almost take away your desire to live? Those are the questions that we have to be asking to uncover what are our idols? What are we really giving ourselves to? It's those questions that help us answer the first one of what we're living for. And see, we have to understand that this desire for counterfeit gods, this desire for idols, it lives within us. We've always got this propensity to put things out of order. It's kind of a natural thing within us. Sure, we want God, but we want Him on our own terms. We want God the way we want Him. We want a God that doesn't make too many demands. We want a God that's okay being with other things or second place in our life. So what we do is we seek after these things, these counterfeits, these idols that make bold, big, bold promises, and we give ourselves to them all with the hope that they'll give us everything we desire, our security, our significance, life. This innate desire for idols, I believe, is why repeatedly in the Bible we are warned not to pursue them and even be alerted to the power that they have to lure us and draw us in. I mean, when we go back to even Exodus chapter 20, Moses has been called to go to Mount Sinai. He's going to receive the law from God at the top of Mount Sinai. And we know this as the Ten Commandments, the big ten. And look at Exodus chapter 20 to see how God spoke them and starts them with Moses. It says, "And God spoke all these words. He said, 'I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me.'" There's number one. You shall have no other gods before me. God says, "You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth below or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, pursuing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation and those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments." I mean, when you think about if we were to sit down and need to write 10 important rules for living, 10 important laws for structuring life, society, and community, what would be your number one? Would your number one be, "You shall have no other gods before me"? I would probably say no. We probably wouldn't start there. And yet, that is so significant to God, that's where He begins. All of life, all of existence for the children of Israel, and even as it carries forth through today, stays that same principle that idols will derail us, idols will suck you in and lure you in and suck your life right out from you. And we have to be careful of these things. Why would God start these commandments with this? Well, I think we have to remember that the Israelites had spent 400 years in Egypt. And Egypt had a god for just about everything. They had gods for work. They had gods for sex. They had gods for war. They had gods for money. They had national gods. I mean, whatever. They had idols. They had gods. And for the people of Israel, how tempting would it be for them to just bring those along with them? We see other stories in the Bible. Abraham, Isaac, and Rachel, and all these, and she steals her father's gods. I mean, there's all this craziness that goes on in the Bible. There's something about human nature that is drawn to something you can see as opposed to something you can't see. We like those visible, tangible gods. I mean, think for just a moment. If you're a farmer and you plant your crops and the seeds in the ground, and now you just have to wait. And let's say you're in a season of drought. What are you going to do? What's more tempting, to pray to a God you cannot see or to go and offer a sacrifice at the shrine of the rain God you can? We're more tempted to do the thing we can see. What's interesting about the way God describes this here, "You shall have no other gods before me," is it's not a monotheistic statement. It's interesting that when you look at that, He's not saying, "I am the only God." He's actually calling out that there are other gods. Now, not like him, but there are other things around us that are always going to be vying for our attention. And what God is saying here is he's saying, look, don't treat non-godly things like God. Don't treat other things like you treat me. And it really boils down to the behavior of the people. How do they and how do we respond to these influences, these idols that seek our attention, that seek first place in your hearts? Notice, again, it doesn't say there are no other gods. It says you shall have no other gods. You see, there's a truth here, whether we're aware of it or not, is that we're always tempted to idolatry. In fact, John Calvin once said, the human heart is a perpetual idol factory. We will be constantly looking for something else to make the central focus of our lives, something to give ourselves to. And the way God describes it here in Exodus, you shall have no other gods before me, is language similar to entering a marriage. It's a covenant. It's essentially saying your allegiance, Israel, is to one God. And when we think about that, think about how countercultural that actually is. For them, they had the hundreds of gods from Egypt they could have decided to worship, and God is saying, no, there's only one. But think about how countercultural that is even for us. God is saying, look around you. See everything else that these other nations are chasing. Look at all the things that people around you are giving themselves to. God's saying, don't be like that. I'm calling you to something different, something better, but something much more difficult. You see, the easy path is to fall into the cultural stream of worshiping whatever your heart desires, living your truth, giving yourself to whatever your heart desires, following your heart. All these statements are endorsed by our culture, and we think that if we do that, if we give ourselves to this, then this will be what gives us life. But maybe you're like me, you found yourself chasing some of those at some point, and you quickly learned there are some dangers in chasing those idols. You see, we think these counterfeit gods will give us significance, will give us security, will give us fulfillment. But it doesn't take long to figure out that these idols, these counterfeits, will make big and bold promises but fail to deliver. Author Andy Crouch said this. He says, idols at first give you everything and ask for nothing. He said, all idols begin by offering great things for a very small price. All idols then fail more and more consistently to deliver on their original promises while ratcheting up their demands, which initially seemed so reasonable for worship and sacrifice. In the end, they fail completely, even as they make categorical demands. In the memorable phrase of psychiatrist Jeffrey Santover, idols ask for more and more while giving less and less until they demand everything and give nothing. That is a statement worth remembering. In the beginning, it seems very easy. It seems very simple. They're asking for nothing, and we're willing to do it because of the promise that is out there of what this idol is offering. But in the end, they demand everything and give nothing. And we think there's not sacrifices, but there always are. The problem is we've just convinced ourselves that the demands that God has for us aren't worth it, but the demands of the counterfeit gods are. Why else would we be so willing to give ourselves to it? Heard a quote this week from the late author David Foster Wallace. He gave a commencement address, and he said this. He said, everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And an outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally plant you. Worship power, he said. You will feel weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart. You will end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. Idols just can't deliver. Not only is that one of the dangers, it's this. There's not enough room in our hearts or in God's for divided loyalty. Jesus made this statement himself, and we'll talk about this in a few weeks. He says, you cannot serve God and mammon. There's only room in our hearts for one, not for two. Because when we try to give ourselves to two things, you will always get the short end of the stick. Something will. You know, that passage we read from Exodus chapter 20, it said, your God is a jealous God. And we think of that and we go, oh, that sounds really bad. We're not supposed to be jealous. No, this isn't the crazy ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend kind of jealous. This is a jealousy that looks out for us, that loves us so deeply that he desires our good. I read this week, said a God who is not jealous in his commitment to us, that is a God who did not particularly care whether or not we love him in return or just wander off with other gods, would be as contemptible as a husband or wife who did not care whether or not their spouse was faithful to them or was just playing around with others. This is not to be seen as intolerance, but exclusiveness. No husband who truly loved his wife could endure to share her with another man, nor will God share Israel with a rival. God doesn't want to share our hearts. That's the second danger. We don't have room. There's another danger too, is that we become like what we worship. We become like what we idolize. We worship money. Guess what happens? We become greedy. We worship success and we become seekers of fame and status. When we worship family, we become selfish and inward focused to the exclusion of others and community. Another danger is just this, the counterfeits give us a false sense of power and control. And only after some time do we find that it was the false gods that had the power and control all along. And instead of finding the freedom we thought they would bring, we find ourselves enslaved. When I was studying this week, one of the things I ran across talked about how, what if the worst thing that could happen to us is that God allows us to get what we most desire. Apostle Paul talks about it in Romans 1. He says, therefore, God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. What if the thing that we thought would bring us life is the thing that's actually killing us? That's what idols will do. That's what the counterfeit gods will do. But let's wrap this up. Heard a story this week. There are these two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way. And the other fish nods at them and says, morning, boys, how's the water? And the two young fish swim on for a bit, and one eventually looks over at the other, and they say, what is water? What is water? I thought of this story this week as I was putting this message together. I wonder if sometimes that we are the younger fish, we've been so surrounded by and consumed by counterfeit gods that we barely recognize how easily entangled we are by them. Are we the ones that are looking and saying, what is water? What are the counterfeit gods? I look around at our world and our culture, and I shake my head, not in disgust, but in pain. And I think, what is going on? I look at our kids and I see anxiety through the roof. They can't even hardly function. Depression, all these things that our kids are struggling with. I look at adults, anger, fear, hatred toward each other. As I think about these things, I wonder, Has Romans 1 happened to us? Have we been given what we thought we wanted, those desires of our hearts? What we have to do is we have to realize that the only way back, the only way to free ourselves from these idols, let me just tell you what, it's not. I'm not going to give myself to that. That doesn't work. Doesn't work. If you have something in your life, the worst thing you can do is give it more attention. Don't think about a pink polka-dotted elephant. What are you thinking about right now? No, seriously, stop thinking about that elephant. No, don't think about that elephant. Now you just can't get it out of your mind. The answer is never to continue to give ourselves and snap the rubber band. Don't think about that. No. The one way back to free ourselves from idols is to turn to the one true living God, spending time with Him in His presence, finding the practices that'll free us. And what we'll find is that when the more we spend with the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, the more that conversation flows, the more God will speak into us, and the hold that these idols have on us will begin to release. And those things that we feel like we have to clench so tightly to, we will find ourselves opening our hands and releasing to God. And I get that this can be scary, because sometimes we think from a religious mindset that says, but if God only knew who I really was, turning to Him doesn't seem fun, because He's going to be ready to just smack me around. No, He's not. When we turn to the one true God, we don't turn and find an angry God. We find a God who's revealed Himself through Jesus Christ on the cross, inviting us to seek Him, to worship Him, to follow Him, all with the promise of abundant life. And so through this series, each week, we're going to give you a practice to do. Something. Now, it's not homework. It's not a requirement. If you have a set of practices that work for you, keep going. But these practices, we want to help to encourage you. They're not a magic formula for all that ails you, but they can be a tool to help you see yourself more clearly and to open you up for the work of the Holy Spirit in your life. And so this week, what we're going to invite you to do is to find some time for silence and solitude. Okay, and you guys know me, I love spiritual practices, but I also love a good journal. And we have journals here for you today. They're just blank journals that you can take. If you want one now, raise your hand. Somebody will bring some to you. We've got boxes of them. But this week, we want you to practice silence and solitude, okay? And here's what we want you to think about. Ask yourself these questions. By the way, we'll put these questions online this week so you don't have to write them down. You can snap a picture with your camera if you want to. What is competing for first place in my life? What is the thing that you feel like right now is kind of nipping at your heels, trying to say, make me first? What do you feel entitled to? That will help reveal an idol. What are you envious of? What are you protective of or fear losing most? Or what can you not live without? We encourage you to take time with these questions. Are these pleasant questions? No. But without these questions, you may look at this and you may say, what do I do? Okay, here's what you do. You find these questions, we'll send them out this week. You take your journal, you write one down. And you just sit there in a place of no distraction, turn your phone off, set it in another room for just a few moments, and sit there and you think, God, what is competing for first place in my life? And just sit. It's uncomfortable, isn't it? We're so bad at silence. Just sit. And you may wait a minute or so, 30 seconds. I mean, sometimes 15 seconds can feel like an eternity. And you may think, okay, that's enough of that one. Then go to the second one. What do I feel entitled to? And you know what? That first day, you may make a minute. Awesome. Give yourselves a pat on the back for going a minute. But if you don't feel like you got answers to the questions, then come back the next day. Start at the top. What's competing for first place in my life? God, I'm just sitting here listening for you. I'm at a place in my life where I'm tired of pretending. I'm tired of going through the motions. I'm tired of acting like things may be when they're not. I want to put God to the test this year. And he says we can. Malachi, put him to the test. Test me, try me, says the Lord, and see if I won't pour out a blessing upon you. God is big enough to handle this. So sit down and just open the journal and say, God, I'm putting you to the test. Either it's real or it's not. I want to know. And God doesn't respond necessarily when we snap our fingers. But I will tell you, if we come and we say, God, I just want to know you. We're about to close with a song that has this phrase in it. You are my one thing. Anybody ever read that, sang that song before? And when we've sung it, you've thought, is he really?
Yeah.
We're going to close with that song. And as we go through this next series, we want to be able to sing that song authentically and say, you are my one thing. Here's some more questions you can ask. It's what's revealed to me, drawing me closer to or further away from God. We can ask God, hey, God, how do I surrender these things for you? And then finally, find somebody to share what you've learned about yourself. This is not about your personal spiritual growth. The individual Christianity comes to an end. It is about others. And I'm not saying you have to join a small group. I'm just saying find somebody. And if you love people, find 12 somebodies. I don't care. Amy will have 12. I'll have one. And we'll both be very happy. I just want God. And I know this water that I'm swimming in is just full of these idols that constantly just keep pulling at me. And I'm not going to lie, swimming upstream against this is going to be one of the hardest things we've ever done. But I know what the idols offer. Man, big promises, nothing in the end. But I know there's a Jesus. And I know he says, I've come to give you life. And not just life, but life to the full. And that's my prayer for us this year, that God will renew us. And we will experience together the abundant life of God as we make him first place. Would you pray with me?